Hey everybody, this is Wade with Wade for Wireless, and I'm just going to cover two things today. One is climbing alone, and the reason I brought this up is because someone thought there was an accident out in Boulder, Colorado, which there was, but it wasn't a tower climber. Okay, it was a guy climbing a mountain, and I have links in there for you guys that want to know about it, but he basically fell 40 foot off of the first flat iron. I guess it's a rock wall in Chautauqua Park in Boulder County, Colorado. Climbing without any safety gear, some yahoo out there, and he fell 40 feet. But he had a cell phone. He's able to call for help. And I don't know how bad he was. I have the links in there. I think he had several broken bones, but at least he was able to call for help, and he was alone, which inspired me to write about climbing alone, because, you know, I was thinking back in February, you know, when that horrible accident in West Virginia where it killed two climbers and a fireman. But I don't know if you remember, I believe it was that same weekend, a fellow was found down there in Bluetown, Texas, and he was climbing alone. And the reason it's so important is because I guess he reported, it was on a Saturday, one. Two, he reported into work in the morning, and I don't know what he went out to the tower for. And, you know, I never got any more details on this. It was sketchy. If anyone knows about this, let me know. But what happened was he was climbing alone, and I guess they wondered where he was. He was gone all day. And according to Sheriff Omar Lucio, it was a 62-year-old gentleman, and his name was Ronaldo. Sorry, I lost it there. Ronaldo Eduardo Smith, may he rest in peace. And my prayers go out to his family. But they found him 30 feet away from a 1,000-foot tower. I just couldn't find any more information. I mean, it was driving me crazy. I mean, here we are 9 months later, and all we really know is his name. And but he was 62. I don't know what he was doing out there climbing alone. He probably thought he could just fix something. And like I said, it happened at the same time that West Virginia accident happened, and that sort of overshadowed everything. But the point is, you know, we should learn from that. I don't know what he was doing. You know, we may never know. The company wasn't named or anything. And again, this was in Bluetown, Texas, where the tower was. But I looked in the reports. I couldn't find anything about the tower company, and I'm not sure who to call about that. I guess I could call the sheriff down there. But I'll look into that. But anyways, I want to make a point here. My point is, I climbed alone a lot in my career. I'm not going to lie to you. I'm not saying it was smart. It was pretty stupid, you know. What I would do when I would climb alone, I would usually call in. We had a knock. I'd call into the knock. I'd say, hey, I'm going up in the air. And then when I reached my height, I'd call back into the knock. NOC is for Network Operation Centers, NOC. So I'd call back into the NOC, and I'd let them know I'm at height. I'd do my work. I'd call back into the NOC, let them know I'm finished and coming down. And then when I was on the ground, I'd call into the NOC, and I'd let them know I was on the ground. What they're supposed to do is time me. So if I don't call back in a certain period of time, they would get back to me. And I think they were pretty good about it. When I had a long job, they would constantly check in to see what I was doing. This is before everyone was texting a lot, or at least before I was texting a lot, so we just made the calls. This is back when we actually had Nextel phones, you know, with the two-way. So was it worth it? No, it really wasn't worth the risk. I don't want anyone doing that today. That was stupid. I was stupid. I really should have known better. I wasn't setting a good example for anybody, and it was all about getting the job done and trying to keep costs down. You know, obviously, if you only have to pay one guy, it's a lot less money. And what I want to do is try to get the point across to you people that we need to go as partners. You know, when you're doing a big job, everyone expects you to have a crew of 2, 4, 6, whatever it's going to take to get, say, a Celeray up, a Dish up, whatever. You expect you have a crew, you know, two, three, four or more people. So, I mean, it's one of those things that's expected when you're doing a big job. But what about when you're doing a small job or maintenance? It's a good idea to have two people. Hopefully you get along with the person you're working with. If you don't get along with them, well, then you got problems, you know. When you don't get along with somebody you work with, oh, man, does it make for a long work day. I mean, a long work day. But you got to do what you got to do. And one of those things you got to do is get the job done. So all I can say is hopefully you start to get along better. You find someone you do like, you get a new partner, whatever. You got to work it out. So I just want to send a reminder out that we really have to think this through. So if a lot of you may not think it's possible to get to zero fatalities and 0% accidents, I'll tell you what, I'm hoping we do. I'd like to think we can do it. 0% accidents is hard because, you know, you just have stupid things that come up every day. But 0% fatalities, I think if we do the 100% tie-off, if we just try harder, people, if we think things through, if we slow down a little bit, and it's not just up to the climbers. You know, for all you carriers out there, all you turf vendors, all you GCs that are in charge of this, you got to make sure your people get paid. You can't be safe on a shoestring budget. It's very hard. You have to work the money in. And I did that last week about the price of safety. It ain't cheap. You know, you're going to spend a couple grand just on safety equipment and the gear and the beaners and everything you need to be safe. It's not cheap. The training, you're going to spend a lot of money on training, but it's smart. If you have the apprenticeship program like TIRAP's supporting and the required training and everything, it's very important. It costs money. It costs money to do that. And when the lowest bidder wins every time, if you got some jerk out there, customer, carriers, it's up to the customer and the carriers, the government, whoever you're climbing for. I would like to think they could come out and at least just inspect the site, make sure people are climbing safely. The tower owners, according to American Tower, they do it. And they kick people off that are free climbing. They said that at the conference there at D.C. when I was at it. That guy from American Tower said that his people would kick someone off the tower and that the tower owners were going to work together to make sure that everyone is 100% tied off. So, and you know, guys, it's come to this. You know, you're going to be policed. You're going to be inspected. Someone's going to watch what you do. You got no one to blame but yourselves because there's a lot of people that don't do it. So you know what you can do to look good? You can be 100% tied off. You can set a good example for the other climbers around you. That's what you can do. For those of you that say, I'm always 100% tied off, congratulations. That is good to hear. That's really important and it does matter. Even if you don't think you need it, I think we're in the state and the industry where everyone's got to do it just to cover their ass, make sure that they're going to be safe. And I think it's something that everyone's going to have to do from here on out. I believe that we can really get the fatalities down. I believe if we really adhere to these policies, we can really make things better. We can really make it a safer business for all of us. And I'm going to be honest with you. You know, I had trouble coming around like a lot of people did, you know, and here's going to quote Albert Einstein, the great Mr. Einstein. He was a genius, right? You know, you're an Einstein. So here's the deal. He had a quote. We can't solve problems by using the same kind of thinking we used when we created them, end quote. So you know what that means? Any ideas? So what he was trying to say is we have to think differently. We have to think what some people would say is outside the box. So when you're putting all that together, I think in the old days we thought we could just do things the way we were doing it. And I think a lot of people were doing it right. And I think the system broke when wireless took off. You know, a lot of these broadcast engineers, you talk to these guys, yeah, they had accidents, bad things happen. But you know what? The system really got out of whack when wireless deployments went like crazy. All of a sudden, you had carriers going crazy to get everything out there. And like I said, you know, they have to deal with a lot of crap. You know, I think I've done this end-to-end thing enough times that you guys are probably sick of hearing it. Like with broadcast, you know, broadcast, when they would do something new or make changes, they usually have a lot of time to do it. I'm not busting on broadcast guys. I'm saying you do it right. You take your time, you plan, you engineer, you make sure you have the money. That's another thing they do, by the way. They make sure they have the, well, most of them make sure they have the money to do it. So the problem with carriers is they had to deploy so quick, so fast, so far, so wide that they had to keep going. They had to hire people. They had to build up systems so quick. Everything was a rush job. And, you know, when I say wireless, I'm not just saying the carriers. Carriers were a big part of it, but governments. Governments went wireless for everything. They always had wireless public safety, but now they found a way. You got to think about how most state and federal governments work. They already had the infrastructure. They had the towers. They already had, say, like T1 lines and analog lines and things like that in the back. They had their two-way systems. So why not use those towers to build backhaul? So that was another thing. They put in a lot of dishes for backhaul. So I think what happens is, excuse me, guys. I think what happens is when you're in wireless, you think of just your business. Like a lot of broadcast guys probably think mostly of broadcast. A lot of microwave guys probably think mostly of microwave. A lot of you carrier guys probably just think of carriers. And I think another problem we have is the carrier business. Because of the way they did business, I'm not blaming the carriers. Actually, I think it just was a trickle-down effect. But I think because things went so fast and they put such a rush on everything that it really got out of control quickly. So I think that's where a lot of the breakdowns happened, and that's what made it so public. The other thing that didn't help is the carriers, you know, they're always fighting for, at least today, they're fighting for more spectrum, more bandwidth, and they're doing that because of the demand. So many people don't understand this business. And you know what? I don't blame them. It's like the internet. How many people get in the internet and have no idea how they connect from, say, the U.S. to Brazil to China to Australia to England to France? You know, we're worldwide now because of the internet. It's really incredible. But do any of us think about the backhaul? In the early days, believe it or not, a lot of it, even then, was wireless backhaul. They used a lot of microwave. I mean, it was really impressive. And now a lot of it's fiber. A lot of the backhaul is fiber. But where are we wireless? We're wireless in the Wi-Fi and in our phone systems. And, you know, we want to be connected everywhere all the time. Anyway, I know I'm getting off here, but let me get back to the point. Sorry, people. So back to the point. I want you to think about climbing alone. You know, this is something probably a lot of you younger guys have never done it. But if you guys are, you know, in your 30s or 40s, I just turned 50. So if you guys are my age, you probably did a lot of maintenance and stuff when you're alone. I think those days are over. I think now you're going to go out with a minimum of two people. And I think you're going to be extra cautious. But don't ever climb alone. It's going to be real tempting. You know what I mean? You're late. You want to get done. Something might be off the air. All you want to do is get home. Trust me. Been there, done that. You want to get done with your day. And you got to climb. It's a quick fix. And this poor guy from Texas, that's probably what happened with him. He thought, oh, if I just go up here and I'm going to use a scenario. Something that would happen to me is, you know, there'd be water in the connectors. No matter how much you waterproof, a lot of times with the old systems, they had the ODUs. The ODUs would get water and it would leak down the cable or leak through the unit into the connector, and that would cause problems. So you'd go up, you'd break the connector open, no matter how much you vapor sealed, you know, all that vapor seal we used, and it just seemed to get water in it. And then we realized later it wasn't, had little to do with the cable and had more to do with the unit. You know, you always think the units are perfect. Well, let me tell you, they're not. The outdoor units always had issues. Today, they have the remote radio heads and so on, and they're built much better today. You know, I'm talking back in the 90s. So, you know, you would work on that. You think, oh, just check this connector, shake the water out, dry it out, connect it back up, and I'm done. I don't have to come back here for another 6 months. And that's something that was quick and easy to do. So we would go do that and do a quick fix. But I got to tell you, I think of Dirty Harry. Clint Eastwood played Dirty Harry. And again, this is a 70s movie, I think, or 80s. But Dirty Harry would say in the movie, you know, you got to ask yourself, you know, right as he holds a gun to the guy, he would say about, you know, whether he shot five shots or six shots or how many shots he shot, holding the gun on the guy. And he says, you got to ask yourself, do I feel lucky? Well, do you, punk? And I got to think, that's good advice. You know, he always had one-liners in those movies, if you're a fan of Clint Eastwood, that were pretty cool. But do you feel lucky? I mean, do you feel lucky? You go up there, I mean, you're really putting your life in your hands. Even if you climb, 15 foot, one of the best things you can do, even out if you're out with two people, I don't know how a lot of systems work now, but we always had a knock somewhere, somebody. Or somebody you could call. I think it was always a good idea to call somebody before you did anything, even if you go up on a ladder, just to let them know. Now, luckily, I know you guys haven't seen any fatalities lately, which is a great thing, but there's still a lot of accidents. You know, it's not like they went away. Just by the grace of God, a lot of these guys are surviving, and I thank God for that. I know that at the time, they don't feel that way. You know, they get all messed up. I mean, recently, I can think of two or three accidents. I don't want to go into them because I already talked about them, but it's something you want to think about. Just, you might survive, but think how long you're going to be laid up and hurt. I mean, this industry is very rough on people, and it's very unforgiving. You know, there was a recent accident where the guy got hurt, and because they didn't finish a job, now he won't get paid. And I get that. That's business, but it sucks. This guy's laid up. This guy's hurt. He's not going to get paid. You know why? Because it's the way the business is. You know why? Because they get these little contractors. They get them out there, and they're going to bring somebody else out to finish it. Somebody else is going to come out and do a third of the job, and they're going to get paid for a third of the job. And the guys that did two-thirds of the job, well, they're screwed. Sucks. I don't know what to tell you there. It just happens. So, but I just wanted to make a point. I want us to remember that guy in Texas. So let's just remember Ronaldo Eduardo Smith. Let's remember him. I mean, the guy was 62, and he thought like old school. He thought, I'll just go up here. I'll fix this. I mean, I'm guessing. We'll never know what really happened. All I can do is just assume, and I don't even know what company you work for. So if anyone knows, I'm going to put feedback in the blog. Just let me know, because I'd be curious to what was going on, whether he was trying to fix something or what, which I think he was. I mean, I can only speculate. So, you know what brought this on was someone came to me on Facebook, and they thought someone fell in Colorado. Well, someone did fall, but he wasn't a tower climber. He was, I guess, a mountain climber. But what sparked, and he fell 40 foot. I mean, a lot of the facts were screwed up. You know, and this comes back to the rumor mill, fellas. I don't mind you reaching out to me, but I looked for, but everything I looked for was tower. But Dave Harrison, David Hacksaw Harrison, he came back, and he found it right away. And what it was a climber. It was in Boulder County in Colorado. He was at, I think I already said this, you know, climbing first flat iron in Chautauqua. The reason I'm bringing it up again, because here's a young man that just thought he could probably go right up there with no safety gear. I know it's not the tower industry. We have a lot of regulations and everything, but even though we do have the regulations, we still take chances, don't we? That's my point. So let's all just work together on this, okay? Let's all just try to see what we can do to help each other. Hey, the other thing is, I put a link in there with some formulas in. I thought you guys would be interested in. I'm moving on now. And there's a link in there about RF from RF Wireless World that has calculators. And they have a lot of cool links in there, to a lot of formulas. And the reason I put the link in there is because a lot of the formulas are pretty cool, because, you know, they talk about exposure, RF exposure, how it would affect you, and the links, you know, a link budget, things that you might use in your everyday work. Say if you're working with dishes or around RF that you might be curious. But what I really liked about this site, it wasn't just the formula. They write the formula out as to what it is. And why is that interesting? Because if you don't have connection to the internet, and trust me, if you work at a tower site, I know everyone thinks we're connected everywhere, but we're just not. It's pretty handy to have the actual manual formula, assuming you can figure it out and do it. Don't get me wrong. But the other thing to think about, you know, you can always... maybe if you know the formula, you can always research it and maybe put an app on your phone or on your laptop, and you can do it. But I thought that was pretty cool. You know, it's always nice to have reference like that, have resources, things that you can use. I think the RF exposure calculator was pretty cool. And just take a look at it. Tell me what you guys think. I don't even know who put it out there. I think I saw someone put it on LinkedIn. I just wanted to share it with you guys. I have no idea who owns it or anything. So it's not like they're not paying me to support it, and I hope I don't get in trouble for talking about it. But I just thought it was a cool app. It's out there on the internet. So next thing I want to go over was some more feedback. I always like feedback, and I try to put it out more often, and I got two things here. So this one's about when I wrote the original article about TYRAP, the FCC, and the Department of Labor team up. I have the link in there. The reason I think this is so cool is because I just want OSHA and the FCC and Department of Labor, really, Department of Labor and the FCC, to know how grateful we are that they're looking into this. I mean, it means a lot to us in the industry. I want them to understand that, you know, it's not just people like me out here saying, oh, we got to be safe. Oh, let's be safe. I think that comments like this, and I'll say it in a minute, but it makes us think about how appreciative that the workers are in the industry. Things are going to change in the industry. Listen, we have a lot of mindsets, myself included, that need to be changed. And one of them, you know, I mean, we talk about unions all the time. Listen, it depends where you're at in the country. A lot of people are anti-union. A lot of people are pro-union. And I think what we got to do is put things into perspective. And I think one of the good things we see about the union, and trust me, I work with I used to work with the IBEW, International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers. And those guys are awesome. And what they did with climbing, they weren't fond of taking climbing on because of the risk, but they've done it. They offer the training and the support for these guys that go above and beyond. What you guys think about it, a union, you gotta look at the big picture. A lot of guys don't want unions. They think unions do this, do that. But I got to tell you, unions are based on your certifications. Right now, tower climbing, very few people in the union have tower climbing certifications. Why is this important? Because a lot of companies still require union labor, especially around big cities. When I say big cities, here's what I think of. I think of Boston. I think of New York City. I think of Philadelphia. I think of Baltimore. And I think of D.C. Why do I think of those particular cities? That's because where I've done a lot of work, they have prevailing wage in effect in those cities. And a lot of those cities require a union for you to work in city limits. Now, do unions go a little overboard? Yeah, it's a little crazy. But in this case, it's a support program. And I think in the industry, you have a lot of tower crew owners that already have this support program in place. These guys are really doing everything they can to make sure their workers are safe. Here's where the problem comes in hand. We aren't all sticking together. We aren't consistent in the industry. And you know what I'm going to compare it to? Years ago, when people sold cell phones, now a lot of the carriers have their own stores. Some of them are independent. But the reason the carriers have their own stores is because no one followed the same policy. Some of these guys were just scumbuckets, you know. They just were doing everything for cash and wouldn't pay the carriers, and the customer got screwed. That's why you see the Verizon Wirelesses, the U.S. Cellulars, the AT&Ts, the Sprints, the T-Mobiles. Let them have their own stores for that reason. And when they do work with a reseller, whoever it is, they're very strict on their contract, because they don't want the customer getting screwed. Because who's the customer going to be mad at? Chances are whoever the carrier is. Now, why'd I bring up the opposite end of the spectrum? With climbing, it's the same way. The whole idea of TIRAP is to have consistency in the industry. And that's what the FCC and the Department of Labor are trying to do. They're trying to set a standard in the industry. Because for every one of you tower crew owners out there, for every one of you guys that runs a crew, that does it right, that does the training, that provides the safety gear, the equipment, the training, the support system that the climber needs, you're going to have five more that don't give a crap. They're just going to say, go ahead and do it. And if you don't think it happens, Department of Labor catches people all the time, OSHA particularly. And that's why the fines are divvied out. They see things that are wrong. Unfortunately, a lot of times, they don't catch somebody till somebody's dead. You know what I'm saying? Anyway, I'm coming back now. I'm just trying to make a point here. So anyway, my comment here was, on my feedback, the gentleman says, I work for Premier Utility Service, and I have been climbing for 3 years now and absolutely see the need for an apprenticeship. It is so great that the industry is finally taking the correct steps to better the future of all of us in the telecommunications industry. Thank you for being such an advocate for all of us. Being that you attended the event, I had a couple of questions for you. Is there an estimated length for apprenticeship? And what is the expected date for completion of the program? Thank you. That's the end of the comment. Now, the expected length of the apprenticeship will be, to be honest with you, I don't think it's actually set. I was looking on there. By the way, I put the link in there for TIRAP. It's basically TIRAP.org. And they have a frequently asked questions, FAQ section. So when you're looking at the FAQ, here's what I gather from this. And I'm going to get more information. I have a couple emails into them. I'm waiting to hear back. As typical with government, it takes them forever to get back to you. But I didn't see a specific time limit. I'm not saying it's not there. So much as I do a requirement for training. They have safety training and technical training. And just to help make it clear, the safety training has to do with competent climber, which have the OSHA standard in there for the requirements, ongoing training requirements in rescue and PPE, personal protective equipment, radio frequency health and safety training, job site hazard analysis, and understanding the scope of work. So those are all things that you're going to need. And those are all things that I think that they look for the requirements. The other thing they have is a technical training. So it goes beyond just the safety and the climbing. So they go over the basic rigging, understanding the sow. The sow is a big part of the job, guys. I'll put out my sow training here, hopefully the end of this week, this weekend. But the reason the scope of work is so important is so you understand what you're doing on the job site. You know what I mean? Listen, guys, you're skilled labor. I bring this up all the time, and a lot of people, they don't even read what I put. When I said, you know, does it require skill? And they say, well, yeah, they get defensive. Well, of course they get defensive, because a lot of climbers, while they're a master of some trades, they're a jack of all trades. Because you know why? You know why you're a jack of all trades? You're alone. It's four guys at a tower site by themselves with no help. You learn to do everything. You know, you learn steel work, you learn electrical work, you have to know how to use a laptop, you have to get creative. You can't always do everything while you're there, but you do the best you can with what you got, and that's why you pretty much have to do everything. Now listen, if you can't do something, you lose time, and remember, that's the name of the game here. But anyways, let's get back to the technical training. Sorry guys, I know I'm off on a tangent there. So technical training, yeah, basic rigging, understanding of the sow, material handling, ropes, knots, antenna, line, installation and maintenance, lightning system installation and maintenance, tower structural installation, applicable standards awareness, exothermic welds, test equipment, basic understanding of regulatory, meaning NEPA, NHPA, Endangered Species Act, etc. I'll go into that in a minute. Operate hand and power tools. Operate trucks, trailers, and equipment. Competent in the operation capstan. Equipment application to the sow. Introduction to various types of structures and appurtenances. So, I know I went over a lot of crap, right? Lightning protection. I think antenna line, installation maintenance, everyone understands antennas and so on. Exothermic welds. Did you ever CAD weld? A lot of guys CAD weld at the site. I CAD welded. You got to be careful. It's not exactly something you play with. Some guys like it. Other guys, it does sort of freak you out when you light it up for the first time and a big flare goes up. You got the big heavy gloves on. You're trying to hold your weld in place. Takes a little bit of nerves, I think. Test equipment. Listen, as you go on in your career, you're going to use test equipment. That's a good thing. You're moving ahead. The understanding of the regulatory, you know what? When you're tower climbing, if there's an eagle's nest, osprey, any type of birds that are endangered or protected, you have to know what time of year to go up. And not only that, but a lot of governments will pay you to go up and rip the nest down in, I think, the fall when they migrate. Why do you rip the nest down? Because you hope they don't build there again so you can do work year-round. But yeah, that screws up a lot of things too, especially in Maryland. I think Pennsylvania, Maryland, trying to think of the other states, but anywhere there's eagles, ospreys, or some protected species, it matters. Yeah, so anywhere there's, and they're considered endangered species. That's why it's such a big deal. If they have a nest up there, you don't want to mess with them. Now, what they used to let us do with the osprey is climb around the nest, but you had to be really careful. Osprey, they would buzz you, but I never had any problems with them. I mean, they would buzz near you. They never attacked me or anything. You know, a human's pretty big. They're not stupid. They know when you're bigger than them. Then the other things, I don't know if I put everything, the hand tools, the trucks, trailer, equipment, operating a capstan. Hey, the capstan winch is a big deal. Most people get it and they don't know what to do. They're reading a book. So
I think if you can get, if you're competent in that and learn to use it and get trained, that's a good thing. And the structures and everything, you know, structures, that comes with experience. You can read about it, but it's not the same as when you climb it. You know, you just learn about it as you come up on it, different types of towers, things like that. So anyway, I didn't see anything, and I have emails into them about specific time. All I really saw was about the requirements for training, and I'm reaching out to them to see if I can find out more because that's a big deal. I think the training's a big thing. I don't think the training happens quick, and I'm going to put a couple links in there. I think I had them in before, or maybe I'll just put a link back to my other post that goes over TYRAP and all the links and all the things I found online because it really has to do with a lot of the training. And the other thing I found online was a PDF document. And again, I have a link. I'll put the link in there once I find it. That goes to on-the-job competencies. It's really good. It outlines everything. And the other thing they do, it not only talks about all the training and all the requirements and what you need to know, but it also goes into like a level one and a level two, which I thought was really cool because it shows you more than just, in other words, most guys probably look at it, oh, I need all this just to do my job. Well, yeah, you do. But then you can also move ahead. You know, they have a level one and a level two in the competencies. So I thought it was pretty good. I'll put it in there. I'll put a link to the PDF. I just got to find the link. Anyway, so that was the first comment. The second comment, oh, by the way, thank you for your comment. I do appreciate it. So the second comment came back again on the notes on the workshop and the tower climber safety. And it had to do, well, here, I'll just read the comment. The workshop, and here, I'll quote, the workshop meeting reads as though it has a great consensus for all to build a common safety and procedures platform for all of us to work from, which will help all of us tower worker bees immensely. I look around my tower crew workers and worry and wonder who will be the first tower worker that may choose to ignore the safety training and get themselves or somebody else injured or killed. I am going to pass along and have parts of your article to read aloud plus parts of the workshop meeting since our weekly safety meeting on the fall protection subject normally amounts to 100% of our workers having no feedback or suggestions. It's amazing that they must perceive that everything is perfect until they arrive at the tower site and everything is not. It is a difficult job for tower climbers and ground crew to adjust and adapt to daily changing safety challenges. My hat off to those of you who were able to make the time to attend and participate in the workshop. That's the end of the comment, end quotes. So my response is, thank you for your feedback and I really appreciate the support. And I think this makes me happy. It makes me happy that I went, okay? I'm really glad that I went. I got to meet some people in the industry. I wish I could have met more people. You know, I think most people had to travel. You know, when you're in the wireless business, you know, it's all about what you're doing next. I hate to say it, but you're always busy. You're always in a crunch. You're always going to the next thing. But anyway, so I love your comment because it's one thing. A lot of these workers, they'll be the first ones to complain, but yet when you're in a safety meeting, they have no feedback. And that might be just because they're processing it at the time. But after a while, you think they'd have feedback or give some advice. Listen, if you're a climber in the industry and you're listening to this or you're reading this, you have to participate. You can't just go out there and say it's his job, it's his job, it's his job. It's your job. It's your job to be safe. It's your job to protect your coworker. It's your job to identify every hazard you can see. And you know what? If you miss something, then you got whatever other guys are on your crew, one, two, or three. It's their job to make up the slack. If you all catch the same things, great. But it's great when you have that one guy that catches something different, that one guy that read the weather report or listened to it or saw it on his phone and said, you know, there's a storm coming this way. That one guy that catches a hole in the ground that no one else caught. That one guy that sees something on the tower that just ain't right. And on Facebook, you see those pictures all the time. You know, you go in some of those tower groups and you see the pictures of the people that just decided to use steel wraps or zip ties to hold a mount on because they ran out of clamps or whatever and they just wanted to get done and get out of there. So when you see stuff like that, if you can fix it or complain to the tower owner, which I think is the best thing, you tell the tower owner what's going on. It'd be great if they paid you to fix it, but who knows? Those tower owners, sometimes they would rather go back and complain to the people that did it in the first place. But the problem is I'm just go through the scenario, and I'm getting off subject here, sorry, but when you see something wrong in the tower, if you call the tower owner, it's great if they just ask you to fix it, whether they can reimburse you a amount or anything. But you as a tower worker, I know you're going to want labor, but maybe just do them a solid and say if they replace the hardware, you can fix it if you have the hardware with you. I carried a lot of spare hardware with me. My truck always probably had about 600 pounds of spare hardware. If you're in the tower business, you know 600 pounds isn't much. So you have a little extra steel. You can do a clamp or at least do something temporary until someone gets back out there. But I'm going to go through the scenario for you. So you guys find something that's stupid that's held on by, you know, a hose clamp mount. It's a hose clamp or a big zip tie or something like that. Might have a clamp on the top and a zip tie on the bottom. And I'm sure the crew that did it just wanted to go home. It's probably the end of the day and they thought, you know, we'll do this. Or they forgot about it. Maybe they were going to go back and fix it. But the scenario is, so the tower crew, the tower owner, say, you know, American Tower, Crown Castle, somebody like that, Spectracite, I don't know who owns towers anymore. It seems like they're the two big ones, Crown and American. So you call them and they call, say, a Verizon Wireless or an AT&T or whoever. And depending upon who they get, they may or may not take care of it. What they're supposed to do is send somebody out to repair it. And then it's supposed to be a ding against the company that did the installation because they have all that in their records. So that's the thing. So, but the process isn't that clean. Carrier may or may not send somebody out. Chances are what they'll do is they'll complain to whoever the turf vendor, the GC, it depends on the company. Like if they hired them direct, yeah, it's going to be a ding on the company. They're going to tell them to go out and fix it. So, and it filters down. Here you got the layers of contractors again that may or may not fix it. If you have turf vendors, if you have a GC, they may take care of it or they may blow it off or they may just sit there and yell at the guy that did it. And if they didn't pay the guy, guess what? It's not going to get fixed. It's going to just hang in limbo till the next guy climbs up and says, who the hell used a zip tie to hold a mount onto a tower? You know what I'm saying? So I'm going to be honest with you. Even repairs get lost in bureaucracy. They just do. It'd be nice if the customer could just pay someone to go out. However, you got principle. You know, well, they didn't screw it up. The guy that did screwed it up. The only thing you can hope is the guy that did it gets a ding and they get a report and they let people know. With that said, I know a lot of tower crews where if you called the owner or the foreman and you told them that happened, they took it personally. Not everyone's the same in this business. Some guys schluff it off. Other guys take it personally. They go out and they repair it and then they get pissed at the guy that did it in the first place. You know what I'm saying? So I don't want to paint it like everyone's a jerk out there. We have a lot of good people in the industry, a lot of good people, a lot of decent, honest, good people. Unfortunately, the jerks shine. That's just the way it is. The good, honest people get lost because you know why? They do their job. If you do your job, some people may give you kudos, but a lot of people just forget about it. So anyways, just throwing it out there. But I appreciate it. I know I went on my rant here and I just want you to know a lot of guys out there just need to be straightened out. And we need to really take the time to straighten them out. But I do appreciate all the good work most of you are doing. And I think everybody does. So, okay, next I have Nate's going to do have a webinar about best practices and workplace safety. I threw that in there. And Todd Schleckaway, if you're listening, you know, it'd be nice if you put an invite or a calendar, something I could put at my calendar, a link, something. I put the link in there to the announcement. But it'd be nice if you had one more thing in there where I could put it in my calendar. I'm just saying. I would like to schedule that. I'd like to listen to it. Just make it a little easier on me, okay? I have the link in there for that too, Nate. And finally, I know this is long today, but I want to say something for Hubble. So I just want you guys to know the Hubble Foundation. Nate has the Tower Family Foundation, which I think is great. And the carriers are all going to support that, which is awesome. I'm a big fan of what Nate did there. However, I don't want people to forget the Hubble Foundation and what they did. So, and Tyrot brought it all close to my heart is when Kathy Pierce got up there and talked about her son. Here you got Jet, who lost her husband. So Jet and Kathy, they're very passionate people who went out of their way to make this happen. They started this out of passion. When I say passion, because they lost somebody they loved. They've been through the tragedies we all dread. They are family members, just like the family members they're trying to help. I don't think a lot of people appreciate that. They're going out of their way, doing stuff in their own time, just so they can help people that have been through what they've been through. They're there not only for financial support, they're doing whatever they can. And I'm not talking just when bad things happen to the family. I'm talking following that. Years later, they're doing all they can to help people. The scholarships, the support, they you know, Jet and Kathy both would help any climber who's stuck on the road. I heard stories of how guys get stuck, you know, the boss screws them, or the company or the contractor they worked for won't pay them, won't pay their expenses, and they don't have gas money to get home. You hear about these stories all the time. And a lot of people call Jet just begging for help. Well, here's your chance to get back and prove that you're going to do some good in the industry. Here's your chance to really help these people. Isn't it time you show you care? Isn't it time you fulfill your legacy? That's what these two women are doing. They're leaving a legacy of love, a legacy of caring, a legacy for the climber, showing that someone cares about them. Listen, a lot of you guys complain. We don't always hear the good. There's a lot of good out there, too. We're getting paid. We're making money. We're in a booming industry, an industry that's changing with the with adding small cells, the indoor work, a lot more wireless work, with putting out more spectrum, more bandwidth, more remote radio heads, more tower work, more wireless work. Every day we're growing. We're all growing. Let's give back if you can. Listen, I know a lot of you guys, it's tough out there. It's really tough. You know, we're scrounging for every penny, myself included. But if you can help the Hubble Foundation, that'd be great. So here you have two women that have been through the horrible tragedies, the worst thing you can think of. One lost a husband, one lost a son. And how do they remember their loved ones? They go out of their way to help the other people in the industry, even people that don't want it. You go out of their way to do things for people that maybe people didn't do for them. Everyone gives their condolences, but how many people actually try to support the families? That's the key. So here we're going to do all we can to help these people. Isn't it time to, again, like I said, show you care, do what's right, leave a legacy of love, leave a legacy of caring. I know I keep saying that, but when you think about what these women have done and what they've been through, it's just amazing to me. All right. I went on long today. Be smart. Be safe. Pay attention to what you're doing.